Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
Uh-oh. Beverage alert.
5 o'clock somewhere.
What was that? A little limonata? Did you turn around on it?
You have a limonata.
A limonata.
I blackball. We're not doing 2 months of lemon drinks in a row. No way.
I don't want to talk about lemon drinks. I want to talk about LaCroix. I have big news. Ugh. I finally threw away the 6-pack of LaCroix that I bought to have in my house for people who drink LaCroix.
Man, just the tabloids have been buzzing about this 6-pack of LaCroix. When are they going to get around to finally just sort of drinking up their medicine?
Griffin and Rachel were coming in. They live in Austin. I thought for sure they would drink the LaCroix.
It does seem like Austin.
We don't drink it here. We're just impressed that the other person owns it. Drinking it with your mouth and tongue and everything? Oh my God.
What flavor did you pick that you thought would apply to any potential guest?
Just like pamplemousse.
Oh, good move, because I was going to suggest pamplemousse. Yes.
You were going to suggest that because you just fucking like saying that word. And we're all on to sort of your schemes.
It's true.
Drinking the LaCroix, though. God.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy. I know the best game of the month.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know a very good game this month.
My name is Russ Frosch, and I converted my closet into a whole recording setup. It's pretty cool.
Oh, you sound like a Pixar character. You sound so good.
Yay. I've seen so many pictures of Russ's closet in the past couple weeks. It's wild.
It's great.
I have a very good sense of his closet. Russ, you sound great. I think that's the first thing on everybody's mind. You sound absolutely.
What's that I hear rattling around a whole bunch, though? It's his skeletons that Russ has in his closet.
Yeah, don't talk about them.
All the dead characters he's played?
It's all his dead characters. That's the skeleton in his closet. He doesn't know how to commit to a bit.
Nope.
So this is the best news where we talk about the latest and greatest in drinks, beverage news. And video games.
Couldn't think of other words to say there.
Couldn't think of
nouns.
Beverly D'Angelo, and clearly Canadian and video games. So this month it's all about video games, folks. They have come a long way since Pac-Man.
Have they? What this month presupposes is maybe they haven't. Maybe they have not.
We have at least one good game.
This episode should be called Besties March. We warned you. We told y'all.
Tried to tell you.
Did we warn them? I don't think we warned them. I think some of these games we were very excited about.
Yeah. Was there any honorable mentions?
My idle game update. Idle update. Everybody's favorite segment.
Yeah.
This month is Deep Town. Deep Town is a game where you've got a mine that's going straight down, and you hire like robots to mine for you and collect resources. And then above ground, you've got facilities that process the things that you mine. And there's story elements because you find caves that you can send robots in to explore, and you'll find like sort of like fragments of a fallen civilization that you can try to learn about. But also, there's bosses where some layers of the sediment are inhabited by monsters, and you have to use your mining equipment to destroy them. And they're sort of like gateways that keep you from the lower ones, the lower levels. So you have to like continue to improve your lasers and all your mining equipment as you dig down. And it's called Deep Town.
Deep Town Mining Factory. Don't mind if I do. Downloading this right now.
Yeah, it is quite good. The other one I wanted to highlight, and I think Chris mentioned it briefly, but I've really been enjoying it, is Alto's Odyssey.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned it last month.
Which I actually confused it with Alto's Adventure.
Isn't it the same style of game? It's the sequel, isn't it?
It is. I just, for some reason, I hadn't processed it as being a new
thing. Oh, my God. I've seen this game everywhere, and I thought it was just the game I'd played last year because it looks identical and the name's almost identical.
That's what I'm saying, that it's not that. It's really fun, actually. I can't speak to how different it is from Alto's Adventure.
I like the idea that you thought Chris brought a 4-year-old game.
I thought he did.
He just mentioned it in sort of passing.
Sure,
so I thought he was just trying to get into it. But like, it's a really good sort of one touch. The best way to probably think about it is like, not if you were to make the greatest like Tony Hawk downhill
or
game,
like SSX, like, right?
Yeah, I mean, SSX is like a fine comparison, but like it is about like stringing together a run where you basically have one button that makes you jump. You hold that button to do like backflips, and then the rest of it is all about finding stuff in the environment. Like there's walls you can grind on. There's balloons are connected by ropes that you can grind on these ropes. There's like rope bridges that you can travel across.
You can't freaking grind on a rope.
What are you talking?
If you're good at them, they break. That's actually true. If you grind on them too long, they snap.
Okay.
So they heard you.
I'm back on board.
You.
You mentioned this being the best downhill Tony Hawk 2D game, and Ollie was that, right? Did you ever play Ollie Ollie?
Yeah, that wasn't downhill though. That was Flatland.
Yeah.
No, it was downhill. What are you talking about?
Flatland, yeah. Dog.
That was a Flatland game.
It was, no, they never made a bubble. Yeah. That's fair. So, fair dinkum.
It is about I wish there was like a little bit more robust with in terms of like what kind of like tricks you could do, because a lot of it's like at the point I'm at, a lot of it's like hoping that I have enough time to very slowly pull off a backflip and not always knowing if I'm going to have enough time to do it. But when you do tricks, you build up more speed. And I think what's really neat about it is that it's continued to like open up and reveal new things as you go. Like it's technically a endless runner. I don't know if it's technically endless or not, but that's the sort of style it is. But it's actually like putting new things into the world as you play through, and I'm still like unlocking new characters and new things that like I didn't even know were sort of part of the scope of the thing. It's also it's lovely to look at. One knock against it being lovely to look at, there's like a day night cycle. And I wish when it gets to like dusk or later in the evening, it could be a lot harder to pick your character out from the background.
You know what? That's true to life, though.
It is true to life, but it is also like
some HDR.
Yeah,
true
HDR.
Blacks.
That's a complaint I'd like to leverage against one of our four main games this month. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
But it's good. It's a nice thing.
I have a thing. I probably should bring as my main game, but I'm gonna drop it here. But Vermintide 2.
Oh yeah, I played
this. Yeah, it's great. It's the full title is Warhammer Vermintide 2, but I prefer not to say that because when I hear Warhammer, I don't want to touch it.
Yep.
The name Warhammer is like a force field that protects otherwise good games. That I see that and I'm like, that's not. Excuse me, Chris, are you going in there? That's not for us. It says Warhammer there. It's like you can't get through that.
You are correct. And the game does a good job of, well, other than the very beginning, not really making you have to learn the intricacies of the Warhammer universe. They kind of like characters talk, but you ignore them because you're slaughtering just hundreds of things. It's basically Left 4 Dead, but upgraded for like 2018. So instead of things like it's all about firing guns, it's much more melee focused, which fixes Left 4 Dead for me, kind of, because it makes it way scarier when things are surrounding you and you are overwhelmed and kind of actually having to get good position to like prevent 20 or 30 enemies from just gobbling you up. There are still long-range weapons. They're just way more precious. There are four class types, And then each of those class types has three subclass types. So if you want to play rogue, you could make it so that you're more stealthy, or you could make it so you're kind of like an archer rogue. It's super interesting. And then there are also loot boxes, but you can't buy loot boxes in the game. So the loot boxes just become this kind of Destiny style system of, at the end of the match, you go to the loot box spot, you open it up, kind of like a Ingram. Isn't that the Destiny word?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ingrams,
and,
yeah.
And all the things that you get are usually just a little bit above your level. So you have this kind of artificial but very fun sense of growth, so that you'll go back into a place that was impossible before, and suddenly you can just carve through enemies. It's smart. The world isn't like my favorite place to live in, like carving through these weird barbarians and rat people. But it's pretty. It's not like terrible to look at. And I'm surprised how fun it is, even like hopping in with people who aren't your friends, which again, I kind of had trouble with Left 4 Dead and the difficulty scale. I felt like I always needed to be playing with people I could talk with.
Ingram, did you guys know, is a Scientology thing?
I did know that. It has something to do with bad memories.
Yeah,
in
it's
your
like a bad
brain.
Mental image of a traumatic event.
Thetans are like ghosts in your brain, and they push you into the volcano.
Anyway, Destiny's a Scientology game, and
everybody knows about it.
That game that Chris just said sounds better than a lot of the games that we're formally bringing as the best games of the month. So what the fuck are we doing here?
Russ, you played a little Vermintide, yeah?
Yeah, I had forgotten that I played it, but I played a little bit with Dave, and I really enjoyed it. It is very similar to Left 4 Dead, as Chris said. I didn't love the fact that I felt like I needed to grind the first like level a bunch of times before I was powerful enough to like do other levels. I don't know, Chris, if that's something that you experienced, but like I felt like I was numerically underpowered for progression, and the loot boxes were like not coming fast and heavy. So I got kind of frustrated, but I did like, I don't know, I like the idea of like an RPG latched onto the Left 4 Dead format. It's also really gorgeous and has Ratman decapitation, which is always exciting.
It's pretty dope.
Nice.
Very violent.
We, as long as we're here in the honorable mentions, we should give one to one that none of us played and should have, which was A Way Out, which we were discussing right before we started recording, because that game looks like kind of all of our jams. But I think sort of, me personally, and I think this is probably the case for all of us, it is sort of a co-op built game where like you really need somebody else to play that game with. It has online and local
co-op. I think you literally
co-op.
Need, I don't think you can play it solo.
Yeah. And it from what I've read, the thing that people have enjoyed the most playing this game is like just doing it either in one or a couple sittings together. And that's a tough, that's a big ask, I feel like.
I guess it depends how long it is.
For me, where I only have like maybe an hour of gaming time that I can spend in any given day, like,
and
that's
you're spending that getting all the moons in Super Mario Odyssey for the sixth time.
What?
Nothing.
That ain't me. That ain't my life. I only did that once. It was my life for a while, but I did that by myself, and that was on the Switch, so I could do it fucking anywhere, which certainly helped.
I've only recently been able to carve out a little bit of time to play video games again, and it's probably even less than sort of what Griffin's describing, because I have too many children. I have like a ton of kids, and I thought I was needed to prioritize a game that I thought that I would enjoy very much. So I didn't get to A Way Out.
Do we want
to
start with that?
Yeah, let's start with that, and then maybe we can find a way to cleanse our palates as we move forward. And I want to talk about Far Cry 5, and I know that other people on the call want to sort of weigh in on it. I have probably, now, full disclosure, and other people probably got me beat here, but, you know, we each have to pick a game, so this is the only one that I've really played. I've probably spent about 5 good hours in Far Cry 5, and I to tell people sort of where I'm coming from, I'm like a big Far Cry 3 on fan. Like
I think we all are, right?
I thought Far Cry 1 was interesting. Far Cry 2 was very cool, but it had some design choices that I know it endeared it to some people, but I could not get down with. But from 3 on, 3, 4, Blood Dragon, I'm down with all of it. Like I even really like Primal. Like I'm down. For me, Far Cry 5, the experience so far has, and when I started to hear some negativity about it, and my assumption was like, I'm still gonna go nuts for it. It's Far Cry. Mm. Like how bad, you know, I'll look past all that stuff. My experience so far has been, here are the big things that I would say. One, very aimless. I don't really feel compelled to do anything particular in the environment. I don't really feel like incentivized. Like there's nothing I necessarily want to pursue. It's extremely wide open. I mean, like when you get through the initial training area, they're like just a massive world, and it doesn't really,
it's everywhere. It's for the first time in a Far Cry game where you could literally go anywhere on the map right from the jump.
And I don't have any connection, and it's asking me to sort of decide what I want to do when I have no conversation. Like I have no connection really to like the world or the characters in it or anything I want to do. So on a grand scale, big picture, I don't feel, I know that I want to, there's a bad cult leader, and I know that I want to mess him up, and he's got people working for him, and I know I want to mess them up. But the like day to day of that is just so like very aimless, and I don't really feel like compelled to do any of it. They have made some very strange choices with progression, which would be the thing I would sort of fall back on. Like, well, if I'm not really caring about the main game, like at least I can start to grind out some of these. You know, I'm the sort of person that like basically doesn't even want to mess with the main story until I've like upgraded my health some and like do all the that kind of thing that I can do before I progress in the story, because I want to be like really well equipped. Animal skins is the big one, where previous Far Cry games, like hunting animals was a way to create upgrades, right? So if you wanted to hold more money, you had to kill some rhinos or something, or if you wanted like,
that's how it works in IRL.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the way it, yeah, that's, or like if you wanted to, you know, whatever, better armor, whatever, you you hunt an animal, get the skin. That's a very concrete sort of like, oh, cool, okay, well, I'll do that. I'll just, you know, I'll hunt some of those animals, and now all of it is replaced with money. I mean, you skin, any animal you skin is just, it just turns into money. And the rest of it is through a, achievement system, and there are achievements for, and when I say achievements in this sense, I'm not talking about necessarily the
hardware side,
the hardware side achievements. So it's like in-game achievements of like, if you get some weapon kills, then you get achievements, and those achievements give you perk points that you can then use to upgrade. Like you can get a wingsuit, you can get a lockpick and a thing that repairs your vehicles and better health and better explodings and all, you know, the whole nine yards. But none of it's like, but like a lot of those are very boring. Like,
yeah,
for example, the shotgun achievement is kill 10 people with a shotgun. So that's basically just like, I don't know, I'll just run around with a shotgun for a little bit and kill people. And it's not difficult. It's not that interesting. It's not fun. And as soon as I finished with it, I was ready to drop the shotgun and get back to the thing I actually like using.
It's so wild, because the whole thing about open world games is like tailoring your character and leveling them up and then play it your way, baby. But now it's like, and also go out there with a flamethrower, which sucks, and get a bunch of kills with it. And then now you got points.
Let me combat let me finish
through.
But I want to address,
I want to, and then we'll circle back on those three big things. The last thing is the world, which is just, as somebody who lives in Appalachia, which is not what we're talking about, but it is a more rural area. It is
trees and hills, right? So like not.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Trees and hills and American flags and a few, you know, Trump signs, what have you. Like it is a similar world to what is being depicted here, I guess. And the game has nothing interesting to say about the way our country is sort of like politically divided and the sort of environment that would allow a cult like this to flourish and the sort of people that live in an area like this. Like as far as this game knows, Montana is just good preppers and bad preppers. Like, those are the two people that live in Montana, is like good, wild, good old boys that live off the land and cruise around on ATVs, and evil ones of those that get high on a wild drug named Bliss that makes clouds emit from your brain, Justin, and turn you into a zombie.
Can I give you just a moment, a quick anecdote that I feel like really captures this problem?
And then, I have one after you. Give me yours.
There's a character who is running for the Senate, and he is hill folk, because that is what everybody is reduced to. And the mission begins promising. He's like, well, I was talking to the who's-its and the what's-its, and they told me that there's this thing called gerrymandering, and gerrymandering is going to make it so the evil cultist can just vote and get what they want. And I'm like, oh, great. And he's like, well, you're probably like me, just another real American who doesn't know what that word is, so I guess you should just go kill them all. And it's like, wait, what? Like, you started to say a thing, didn't explain what it was, then completely pivot off of it. And then the great part here is then, if you go north, there are very minor spoiler. There's a series of missions that even if you're just trying to enjoy the open world, it doesn't matter. You get randomly drugged and you wake up.
They do that in all the regions, by the way. That same mechanic.
Oh, great.
Is in every
really
region.
Really wonderful. I hate it.
My anecdote is two things. One is I heard a guy, and he was like just an open world nobody character, and this is a bark I heard from him like three times when I was trying to get a bugged mission to work. By the way, there are
so many of those.
A healthy number of those. This guy's like, I was always suspicious of our gun laws. But I guess it's a good thing if we didn't have the right to keep and bear arms, we wouldn't be able to defend ourselves from this cult. It's like, yeah, dude, that's why we have the Second Amendment, to defend ourselves from fucking wild cults. And it's just like that. It's like politically adjacent. Like, it's like the most Far Cry 5 thing. It's like, okay, that's an opinion. Do you have anything to say about that? Like, do you have anything to comment on beyond just having a character be aware of the fact that there is a gun law debate in our country? Like, it takes no position. It's just like somebody saying like, I guess it's a good thing we have guns because of this cult, like, you know, for when we're all in that situation when we have to defend our state from a doomsday cult, because that's why the right to bear arms is there. The other one is I've been playing this game for 5 hours and I've already been tasked with retrieving two very important trucks. Like,
I'm a little bit further than you. I've done maybe four important trucks and one important plane.
It's like, these very important trucks that are a part of our family, and please go get my special truck back. Like, it's just wild. And it's like, has nothing interesting to say, and is also like, it wants to be sort of like avant-garde in its messaging and its world and its setting, like setting a Far Cry game in America, but it has nothing to add to the conversation.
And the problem isn't, this is the conversation about this game, the controversy. These evil game journalists want it to be, you know, liberal in a way and tackle these real world issues. And why are you the ones bringing this to the conversation? And well, first of all, we're not, they definitely did. Like, they knew what the fuck they were doing when they made this game be set in the place that it's set, touching on the issues that it touches on at a time where, like, in IRL, it's like, you know, really popping off, and it's kind of irresponsible, but whatever. If that's not your problem with the game, that's fine. But in the vacuum that they have created by not touching on that stuff, they have created a narrative that fucking sucks the wind and the moon out of the sky. I did a mission. All the side missions, by the way, are either hyper, all the missions in the game are either hyper grimdark or fucking straight out of Tony Hawk Underground 2 level farts shenanigans. And to wit, I did a mission where, I saw Chris tweet about this earlier today.
Oh my gosh,
a mission where you're sneaking through the woods with this woman who can become like an accomplice of yours, who's like a stealthy archer. And she wants to kill this bad guy in the cult. And while you're doing this mission, she's explaining at length the grotesque
things that this cook has done to the community, including, and this is truly upsetting, so I content warning, legit, not a joke. There's a bit where she talks about how the cook made these kids, he starved this community, and so the people had resorted to drinking their own piss, and the kids had to do it too, and the parents had to make them do it, and they put up a resistance, and then the cook fed the kids their parents, like cut off their toes while they hung them up and fed the kids their toes. And it's like, fuck, guys, you didn't earn any of this. And then the next side mission I did literally 4 minutes later was running over bulls with a big threshing tractor to collect their balls for a big balls festival. And then there's a dude like, the sweet balls in my mouth. Give me those balls. I want to pop in those balls in my mouth. And ooh, I love tasty, sweet, juicy, basically hot like balls.
It's you like know how in the show MASH, when they would like have a goofy moment because Houlihan was doing something and then they'd realize they were in Korea and things were really bad.
Yeah,
it's basically that.
It's just as good as MASH.
It fucking sucks. It's so bad. It's so wildly laughably bad.
I want to chase the thing that Griffin just said. I would have killed for the ball mission after it, because mine was, well, first you get all this lead up and then the guy ends up just being a tank character that I like blew up from about 100 meters away.
Yes, so, I hit him with a rocket launcher.
There is no end to the story. But two, right after that, and again, spoiler, but it's a thing that and it's awful, but whatever, it cuts to a mission or a cutscene with a character talking directly to you about how his baby daughter was born and they thought she wasn't going to live, but then she does live, and then they pray together, and then the baby daughter has a breathing tube and he holds the tube shut to kill her. And there's no logical explanation for why, and that gets to the heart of what I find really upsetting about the game, is making a game that has all these things in it and handled them with like any depth or intent would be fine, or it would be like a start towards fine. What's really disgusting to me about this game is that all of these things and the crucifixions everywhere, the mass graves everywhere. I don't remember Far Cry games, the landscapes being so covered in just blood and guts and like humiliated corpses. It doesn't serve anything. Like I truly don't understand what the point of this cold is. And why does it have Daniel Bryan
That's a great question for another podcast. But like, they're doing these things because these games have always, and really a lot of and this is not me grandstanding, because I fucking platinumed Far Cry 4. Like I love
it's
games
got,
like
it's
these.
Like there's no fucking question. That's what I wanted to reinforce. Like, history has proven that I can ignore some whack shit from Far Cry games if the game part itself is good.
It is good, and it's not great here. But like the reason it does all these things, the reason it has the mass graves, and the reason it makes these people, the cult is so cartoonishly evil, they may as well be fucking Bible thumping rabbits. Like that's legit what they're at. And I feel like the reason they do that is because you, the player, the deputy, you're gonna end 4,000 lives by the time the credits roll. And so that's how this game solves for that. Is like, well, yeah, you just do it because these people aren't real. Nobody's this big of a fucking ghoul.
I feel like Russ wants to lend some defense to the game parts.
I
of
do.
This.
Yes. Here's what I'm going to say. The story is dog shit. Like, I'm not going to beat around the bush. It's really bad. Consistently, whether it's trying to be serious or trying to be goofy, neither of them land. It's bad. But I actually do find the sandbox and the things you do in the world pretty fun, personally. And I've played all the Far Cry games and I've experienced them all. I actually found the freedom of it kind of nice, because I would find, similar to Justin, where he wanted to wait until he had his like souped up shit before he did the story missions. Like, I liked that I didn't have to mainline the story until I unlocked the ability to get a wingsuit that I wanted to use.
How often do you use that? I hate the landscape of this game. Because how often do you use the fucking wingsuit?
Like, I use it all the time.
Really?
all the time.
Really?
I bought a helicopter. And
After the wingsuit, you unlock the ability to fast travel in the air. So when after you fast travel, you'll start like 300 feet up in the air.
Okay, I guess I haven't gotten that 10 cost upgrade that I need to enjoy the first two upgrades I purchased in the game.
Go ahead. Let me just on the game itself. I don't think the idea that it's a wide open game is a knock. I do agree with Justin insofar as I think what they needed was one more mission after the map opens up that sort of welcomes you into the world and gives you a little bit more grounding, sort of similar to Skyrim, which has the like go to Whitehall or Whitehorse, whatever the town is called, talk to the Jarl and like at least something to guide you in.
They do. Well, in the game's defense, they do kind of. The guy on the radio says, "Here's three towns. You should go to those first."
But yeah,
I want to suggest you go
mission,
to that one first. My problem isn't that the world is too open and that you have too much freedom when you start out. That's not my problem because I also enjoy that. Sure. My problem is that I feel like there's no reason for me to do anything because I think the upgrades are really weak in this game. You have a rebellion meter, or I forget what it's called, but you by like blowing up shit and stealing supply trucks and looting them and freeing people, rescuing people and completing missions, you raise the rebellion meter. And it's like, other than activating these story things, which all come in the form of you getting kidnapped over and over, and I've been kidnapped so many times, I don't know why I'm doing any of that shit. It's just to move the plot forward. If that's the case, then I'm not getting some sort of tangible reward out of it. Like, I'm gonna pass up the next fucking
from doing those. But yeah, I agree with you.
Guns unlock, but like I already spent a bunch of money upgrading the first couple guns that I got, and as far as I can tell, there's some of the better guns in the game, so I'm good there. Like the whole progression system's kind of whack.
That's the kind of thing that like I don't mind the openness. I just would like. Just the amount of things that are foisted upon you without any sort of hint towards like why you would want to do them or like what. Here's an example. When you encounter like freedom fighters, I guess you'd call them, like people who are sympathetic to your cause that you can hire. And it just gives you a button prompt. Like, do you want to hire this person? And like, I already had, and I started running across people like this, and I already had somebody. Like, I already had, like, a partner, I guess, that was hanging around with me. I literally don't know, like, why I would hire them. Or, like, should I? It's certainly offering me a lot of people to hire. Should I be hiring other people to do other things for me? Can I? Am I paying them weekly? Like, what is the structure of this? Is it a one-time fee and they're with me? I have no idea how much hiring them costs. I have no idea what the rebellion meter does. Like, I'm getting there's like, silos, right? It's the most boring shit in the world.
I just mentioned that, yeah.
Throw a grenade at them and, like, you get rebellion points, right? I don't know what that's for. I don't know what, I don't know why I would want more vehicles. I don't know why I'm, like, in the area
in. And while you're doing that stuff, while you're driving around and exploring, or, like, you stop at the side of the road and find a mission, inevitably, fucking 8 trucks from the bad guys.
It seems worse than
any
Far Cry game I've ever played in that regard, you're just trying to get from A to B. And there's just idiots every single time.
Fun experiment. Fast travel literally anywhere except in the middle of one of the main towns and wait 9 seconds. And you're fucking swarmed. And I get that there's bad guys on the road. Also, we haven't even touched on this. The autosave in this game is fucking criminal. It is so bad. It is like early 2000s era. Like, oh, looks like you just traveled across the whole map. I'm actually going to drop you back here arbitrarily. Like, so bad.
All I'm going to say is I've played the game more than anyone. I'm not saying you guys are wrong, but I have enjoyed the game so long as I could turn off my brain part of the story. I also want to say playing with other people is quite fun, and the Far Cry arcade things are quite fun. You can like make your own maps and do them with other people, and it's pretty enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think the
fact that you've played that long is why you are now having fun. Because
right.
The thing with the perk system I just want to hit one more thing on it, is this has been a problem with Far Cry from the beginning, is they hide convenience or, like, comfort inside of your upgrade tree. Same thing with, like, loot, having to, you know, I don't even think it's in this game, but having to upgrade a slot so that you can just walk over a character to loot them rather than having to do the loot animation. In this game, having your basic skills, so... hang or what is it the wingsuit and the parachute being the same thing as another basic skill, like being able to have three weapons at a time, because the game is meant for the having an explosive, a specialized weapon, and pistol loop. Just to enjoy that part of the game, you have to save up and upgrade for it. And having all that inside of getting health, and you want the health because, like you said, anytime you just sit somewhere for a second, you have eight characters ambushing you. That I think the game will be very fun once I have worked through probably, like, I don't know, 5 to 6 hours of just grinding the basic features that I can then like, okay, now I have the basic things to have fun in this world. Now I can go and enjoy it.
But it is more fun then, as you play.
Oh my gosh. The violent bodies everywhere. The gore, it's such a beautiful game, and it really is a stain.
I also have to touch on, before we move on, and we have other games to talk about, I'm certain of this fact, I think this is probably the biggest release. The bugs. I did a mission where I was supposed to find three parts of an irrigation system. Boy, fun. And slow down, Far Cry. It's too delightful. And I had to find three parts of it. One was on top of a windmill, fine. I had to shoot it down. One was on top of a building, and I had to climb up and get it. The third one was on a trailer that, like, the car drove away as soon as I got close to it, right? So I'm like, come back. Like, it wasn't a bad guy. It's just a guy with this thing on a trailer that I had to get. He drove away, so I chased him, and then eventually, like, I found the piece just, like, lying on the ground a little bit down the road. I'm like, weird. Okay, I guess it fell off. But when I picked it up and I brought the third part back, the mission wouldn't move forward,
yes,
and it forced me to reset it. And then I reset it, and I went back to where the trailer was before it peeled out, and it was floating on an the trailer was invisible, and it was just floating there in the air, and then it drove away. So it looked like this sentient irrigation part was just floating away from me to keep from being reintegrated in the system. Three attempts
That's
to finish
the shit
that.
Right there.
There are also loot trucks that you're supposed to be able to loot by pulling them over and then lowering a ramp in the back, and then the door to the truck pops open and then you get in. Except I've stopped four of them and the door has never opened, which apparently is a known bug.
Yeah, there's
at this
a button.
Point.
There's a button you have to press
on the side of the truck.
No,
it's not in the back of the truck.
It's on
the side.
And it lowers the ramp and then the door opens. I can get the ramp to the ramp will lower, but the door does not open.
What?
That's
wild.
It's every time I've stopped it. I Googled it. It's like a known thing. But there's other stuff. I mean, like, again, I've seen way too much for as little as I played.
It's just, it bums me out so much when a controversial game like this comes out, controversial, and the conversation about it, like, cements into, if you disagree with its politics, you're not allowed to find it fun, and if you just want it to be fun and you disagree with all you, it's not right to criticize its politics, I'm just here for the fun, when it's like, hey, everybody calm down. It can be bad in both ways. Or you can find its politics, like, whatever. It's vacuous and
it
shitty.
Doesn't have
enjoy it. Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. There's I could not tell you what the politics of this game are.
It does not have politics.
It doesn't have. Okay.
That's not necessarily a bad thing on its surface, but at least you got to have a story. I mean, like, if you're not going to take a political position, which I don't think there's another Far Cry game that has, honestly. At least they have a narrative. They have a narrative that you give a shit about and you care about, and they have villains that are charismatic. I'm not feeling it from this guy at all. And again, I could ignore that stuff. Like, that stuff is, like, it would be nice, and I think it's important if you're going to take it on. But, like, just the mechanics are so disappointing. And I will. That said, I'll continue to plug away at it, and I'm in the hopes
you
that
you just don't have to.
There's not much else.
It's just let's talk about another game.
That's true.
I'm over it.
There is other stuff. Can I do mine? Because I think that'll be a nice. So I wanted to bring Ni No Kuni 2, Revenant Kingdom, which I had no interest in playing whatsoever. Did not like Ni No Kuni 1. Played like 3 hours of it, of this huge sprawling JRPG, and was like, I'm good. But then we ran a review actually that was very favorable. And I was like, oh shit, well, maybe I should pay attention, because Ni No Kuni 2 drops basically everything from Ni No Kuni 1 that made that first game not very appealing to me, which is weird on paper because Ni No Kuni 1 was kind of Pokemon-esque. You were collecting these, like, spirits that would battle for you and leveling them up, but it was just super, super clunky and super slow, and didn't, what it just wasn't a great game.
Ni no Kuni 2 opens up. This is, I guess, kind of a spoiler, but it's literally the first thing you see in the game is the president of sort of a fictionalized America named, his name is Roland. He's in a limo. He's being driven as part of a motorcade somewhere. He's driving across a bridge into a big city, supposedly in the country where he is president. And he sees a missile fly overhead and explode. And
SJWs, am I right?
And it destroys the city and destroys his car. And then while he's kind of dying, he is teleported into the world of Ni no Kuni. It is a it is a fucking buck wild way to open up a game. The main game is sort of centered around this boy named Evan, who is the heir apparent to a kingdom called the Ding Dong Dell, which I'm all about, which is sort of a kingdom of animal people and humans living side by side. And he is sort of dethroned, and then you as the president of from this other world are sort of helping him rebuild his kingdom, and that's sort of where the game takes you. But instead of being sort of a monster collecting slow RPG, all the battles are actually real-time sort of like action battles. You have full control over your characters. You have a light and heavy attack button and a ranged attack button and a special abilities that you can learn. All the battles take place in like these circular arenas with a bunch of stuff going on. So it's very like hands-on, very, very dynamic. So this game is made by Level 5, who is one of my favorite RPG developers, but they haven't really made anything that I've been like crazy about in the RPG realm. They make the Layton games, which are all, you know, Layton games, they're all pretty good. But like Dark Cloud 1 and 2 are two of my favorite games ever made and two of the best RPGs of all time, and they haven't really done anything like that in a while. And this is the first game that kind of feels like they're doing that, because what they've done with Ni no Kuni 2 that really reminds me of Dark Cloud 2 is a very like everything and the kitchen sink approach to mechanics. So you have like these battles, these real-time battles that are going on. You do have some, there's a light monster collecting element where you collect these things called, oh Jesus, what are they called? They have a really goofy name. Higgledies. It's even worse than what you said, which have different abilities, and all they do is run around the arena, and at certain points, once they've charged up, you just have to like move to them in the arena and activate their special skills, which adds sort of another layer on top of combat, of this like positional sort of way of thinking about it. And then there is a whole kingdom building element where you have this kingdom and you can upgrade its buildings and find new residents by doing quests and then assign those residents at those different buildings to, you know, maybe you assign a big warrior dude that you've recruited to work at the blacksmith, and then he can research new armor and weapons that you can.
Why has he got to do work purchase at the blacksmith? Why can't he be an accountant?
He has blacksmith skills, but if he has accountant skills, he could be in, you know, work for the
just
treasury.
Seems like you're just judging him by looks, honestly, Griffin.
No. Go chase your bliss, blacksmith man. Please balance the books for me. That's what I. Oh, we've bankrupted. That's fine. You did your best, and I'm not here to tell you how to do your job. And so it's like it's a very mechanically rich game, but in a way that I think everything kind of supports the other stuff going on in the game. You have these monsters you can collect, but those support the battles. And then you have this kingdom that you can build, but those let you get new skills and new weapons and other bonuses. And there's a huge, very, very Level 5-esque. Their games have such a like iconic sort of very anime inspired, very like, not cell shaded in terms of like what the filter of the thing is, but I feel like that term gets across a certain aesthetic to the game, just very, very colorful. And it's just such a nice game to play. Like it's such a, it is a game about a boy, like learning how to be like a responsible ruler of this world. And I was so worried when it was like, the game is about a small boy and his building of a cat kingdom. I was like, oh no, this boy's gonna be insufferable. But he's actually a very good boy, and like there's some really great relationships in the game, and like people trying to teach him how to do the best job that he can do of ruling a country.
It's really nice to play, and it has a really nice story, and then it has like a ton of very cool mechanics. Nothing close to Dark Cloud 2. I don't know if any of you ever played it. It was a dungeon crawling RPG that eventually you unlocked a game called Sfeda, which was essentially mini golf. So you would clear out like a dungeon floor of all the enemies and be like, hey, do you want to play mini golf in this dungeon floor? And then you could do it, which would like give you bonuses and shit. And that series obviously also had some kingdom building stuff to it too, but yeah, it just has like a ton of different mechanics to it that are work really well together and are unobtrusive and real-time strategy battles also. I forgot to mention that.
I'm not really much with the JRPGs by and large, like very few of them I can play, although I do like more action-y ones. How cutscene-y is the game?
Oh, pretty cutscene-y. Yeah, I mean, it's got some cutscenes. I think if you are turned off by JRPGs in general, this is not going to be the crossover hit for you.
Yeah.
But for me, like, I have not played a JRPG that I really enjoyed in a long time, in a really, really long time. And this is really the first one that I was kind of interested in and ready to sort of open up my heart to, and I'm about 15 hours into it so far, and I have not been disappointed at all. Chris, you've played it a bit too, right?
Yeah. I mean, a thing that you covered kind of all the bases. I like the optimism of it. You know, it's just nice to play a game that is totally unrealistic about the way the world works.
Yeah.
In that your entire goal is just making friends, and that will solve everything. And I haven't finished it, but something tells me it works out.
The number of crucifixions you come across will be limited at a cap of five.
maybe that's why I like it so much, is it's the polar opposite. The other thing I really dig is, so as you know, I like Disneyland a little bit. There's this ride in Disneyland called Storybook Village. It just opened. It closed for a long time. They had to repair it. But the idea is you get in like a little boat, and then you glide past all these scale models of the like famous Disney kingdoms. So it's like, oh, there's the mines where the dwarves live. There's the castle from Snow White. And it's very novel. They're very, very tiny compared to you. You feel like just a huge giant. But the attention to detail is super neat. In this game, the open world map, how would you describe it? What's that word for a cute version of
chibi
characters?
Like chibi versions.
Chibi. Kawaii.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not. It's chibi.
It's kawaii.
But they are kawaii.
Kawaii means cute in Japanese. Chibi is the specific artistic sort of vision.
Yeah, but you like walk around as chibi versions of your characters. For people who aren't familiar with that idea, maybe like bobblehead versions might be a good way of thinking of it. And you walk around these landscapes that feel more like miniatures of giant cities. And I don't know, it's a strange overworld thing that reminds me so much of like a Super Nintendo RPG. Like in some ways it feels kind of like a tour of the history of RPGs, because it's borrowing from all these different kind of periods and then piecing them together into something that I think gels pretty nicely.
But what's great about it is that I feel like that is what a lot of RPGs, especially JRPGs that are coming out these days, are trying to do. And it is not in their favor. This game actually is also, while looking like one of those games and incorporating a lot of those elements, it very wisely has a lot of modern shit. There are these things called what are they called? They're like warp gates, and they're fucking everywhere. They are everywhere. So like when you're in the world map, you will you'll go into a dungeon or a new town, and in each one of those you'll find like five or six different warp gates, and then you can instantly travel between any of them. So like it's not like, oh god, I have to go back to this town to give this ribbon back to this cat so that I can complete her quest and recruit her as a villager in my town. It's just, oh, I'm gonna travel to the warp gate that's right next to her. It has like all those rough edges are polished off. So it's not like, yeah, it's very retro inspired, which is to say it hates that you're playing it and wants you to waste your fucking time. It's actually very thoughtful of your time and very, very smart in how it incorporates that stuff.
Cool. Do we want to take
it? Also, I don't know if this is a knock against the game or what, but it really makes me just want to go back and play Dark Cloud, because those games are fucking great.
Great. There's our Dark Cloud minute that we have every episode where we talk about Dark Cloud.
Do we talk about Dark Cloud a lot?
Can we talk about Nier Automata this episode?
Hey, Griffin, it's a news segment.
Oh, okay.
Just every segment's got to start somewhere. Now it's time to talk about Nier Automata. I haven't played it this month, but it is still a very excellent video game.
Do we want to take a break, or are we going to hop into the next game?
Do you have something to talk about, Chris Bryant?
I think we used a lot of our break time dunking on Far Cry.
Yeah, I don't think we have leftover time for a break. I want to talk about Sea of Thieves. Can we talk about Sea of Thieves?
Wait, what am I talking about? Isn't that my game this month?
I want to be in a conversation that is based on Sea of Thieves that is initiated by my dear friend Rush Frushstick.
You can go off. Sea of Thieves. We were all, every single one on this call, I would say, I don't know about Chris Plant, but certainly the McElroys and I, were very, very, very excited about Sea of Thieves. They had played it.
I played it a couple E3s a year ago. I was a big evangelist for this game because that game, the first, you know, the demo of that game, I think it sells it really well.
Griffin's love of Sea of Thieves took the internet by storm.
True.
When he ate a banana.
Which ended up in the game in multiple forms.
It's an achievement, it's in a sign, he's famous. Finally, you made it, Griffin, well done. We were all very, very excited. But I think there was always, whenever we talked about the game, whenever we played it, there was always this sense of like, okay, they nail like being on a ship and working together, and the way the water effects look amazing, and the lighting is amazing, and the sunsets and everything. It looks stellar. But, you know, these missions are fun, but, like, you know, it's going to go somewhere, right? Like, you're going to do a few of these, like, fetch missions, and then you're going to unlock maybe a faction, and the faction is going to have specific faction quests that you like, and there's this little story, and you follow it along, and you progress, and there's, like, a thing that's going to keep you coming back.
There's going to be a game here, right?
That conversation also got more and more hopeful, I think is maybe the right word. So we played it like at E3 and we're like, okay, it's fun, but I'm still wondering what they're gonna do with it. And the first beta came out and it was like, all right, it is fun. I played it a lot, just waiting for them to patch in like the game. And then the last beta was like, oh, they've added some more stuff and it's looking really promising. So maybe it's only got a couple weeks till it comes out, but then the game
I remember thinking like the beta's out. This is only gonna be like 10% of the game in the beta. Like they're gonna hold back all the really juicy stuff, right, for the full game release. And then the game came out and it was the beta. Like every aspect of the beta showed the full game. Good news, everyone that played the beta, you got a free copy of Sea of Thieves for a week.
That's not you saying that this game is a beta, which is like a way of knocking it. It's literally identical to
content what wise was in the final beta. What was in the beta, which is to say, what you're doing is a lot of fetch missions. Everything that you're earning is purely cosmetic, which is fine. Like, there are plenty of games, including PUBG, that I absolutely adore that are purely cosmetic games. But you definitely fall into this very familiar loop very, very quickly, where the first 3 hours you play the game, you are like totally enraptured by everything that's going on. And then you basically, as we've said in the past, you see the Matrix. You understand how this whole thing works, and essentially the rest of the game just boils down to like those missions in Bethesda RPGs that are like randomly generated, where it's like go to X and collect Y and bring back X. That's every mission you do. So you really don't get a lot of thrill out of the missions, which really, from a thrilling perspective, really only leaves PvP, which more often than not, you are just trying to avoid because you've got a bunch of stuff in your hole. But if you go and do PvP, you can do that. But I felt like had a ceiling of variety because everyone has the same gear, the same loadouts, the same ships. Every single thing is exactly the same for every single person. So even though no one has an advantage, you also don't feel like there's a lot of opportunity for variety in the way you conduct yourself. And that's really the biggest issue with Sea of Thieves is it just ends up repeating itself over and over and over again. And I can see in a year from now, I can see it being, whoa, like it does this and it does this and it really reinvents whatever. Because the foundation is actually really interesting and strong. But right now, it's definitely not that. And it would take a major overhaul of the game to make it something more.
It's just, guys, come on. If you're gonna, you could do the game that they did. I would play the same missions, the same three types of missions, not the merchant missions. Those are fucking terrible. But I would do the other two over and over again if I was, if I felt like I was working towards something. And if you really, yeah, I would. And because I'm broken inside. But if you really, if you really want to keep it even playing field, and I definitely understand the reason for doing that. And not have these mechanical upgrades. That's whatever. Although, if you did have mechanical upgrades, like, you could even do a fine touch. I would play for an hour just to get a skill that's like you raise the anchor up 5% faster. Like, they didn't have to be that wild. But, okay, you want to keep it flat? Cool. Whatever. Give me, like, a pirate base that I can take my friends to that I can unlock furniture for. Give me, like, modular ship upgrades that I can show off to my friends to at least show them and have them operate in an economy that is not fucking inscrutable, where you can get a haircut for 350 gold or you can buy this new paint job for your ship for 250,000 gold. And it's I'll never do that. I won't do that.
I've heard about the ship cosmetic stuff. Who, like, this is probably clear to you if you've played the full version, but, like, who owns that? Like, whose ship are you driving at any one point?
Like,
who
I don't think actually am not 100% sure, because I did not play, like, you legit need to play probably 30 hours to unlock the first cheapest ship customization. It's like 70,000 gold for the cheapest sale you could possibly get. So I'm not actually sure who owns that stuff and, like, how it determines what the front of your ship looks like. It might just be the host of the game, but I'm not sure.
That was a wild example, right? The ship upgrades are all really expensive. On a smaller level, I played for 2 hours, and a lot of that was spent on one voyage. I knocked out this huge treasure hunt and got 3 chests out of it. And then on my way back, I found a sunken ship and dove into it and found a couple skulls. And I got those skulls in my ship, and you turn those in at a vendor for gold. And then I took out a small ship in PvP combat and took their chest that they had and had a ton of shit. And I came home and I sold it all. And I was like, nice. And then I went and I, like, couldn't afford a shirt. And it's like, why did you do it like this? The economy, it's hard to explain, because, like, you need a spreadsheet to really, like, see just how wild it is. But it's just like, there's a small tier of basic gear that you can buy. And then most of the clothes you can buy is, like, actually pretty expensive. And it's like, okay, so I guess you wanted to gate that for the higher level players. The cheapest, like, sword upgrade, the cheapest sword or gun or whatever weapon paint job is, I've never had enough money to earn one of those. It's just like, I get the idea of wanting to make it so that you have to be a higher level pirate or whatever in order to afford that stuff, but it just makes me not want to spend any of my money for any reason. And I don't know why you didn't just do a loot box that you could find or purchase with gold.
Right, because it's all cosmetic, so it wouldn't necessarily
matter.
It's all
cosmetic. Just make that shit random, and then it's not like I'm going to spend fucking 30 minutes staring at a screen of things within, like, wild prices, just thinking, like, well, should I buy these gloves that look like bandages, or should I save my money for something else?
And it's weird for a game that is purely cosmetics. Effect, if you work it out, it basically only has like 4 or 5 armor sets. Like, it's not armor, it's clothing, but like clothing sets. And that's bonkers.
And when I bought the game, it came with a set of like badass looking Blackbeard, techno Blackbeard armor. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, I'll just wear that and never spend any money on my clothes ever. But if I had gotten a chest and it was like, here's an ugly green shirt, I'd be like, fuck yeah, ugly green shirt. Let me throw that shit on.
It's also weird for a game that's all about cosmetics and like changing the way you look, how, although creative, how limiting the character generation system is. Because like I wanted to make like a really round looking guy, and it took me 45 minutes of scrolling through people to find one that I liked, because you don't have any direct control over it.
You just randomly generate like eight you just, pirates like, or something.
I generated probably hundreds because I was like, well, I'm going to play this game for 100 hours and I want to make sure I like the way my character looks. And is that a better experience than like just having a slider to tell me, okay, I want a fat guy or a skinny guy or whatever? Like, like it's cute, but there's no reason for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a real bummer.
There's not much to talk about. Like,
right.
I like it. I enjoy it. I do still enjoy the game because it is. I still play it. Because it's still like a unique thing. And I'm
do
all
you really
about
still
like.
Play it? How much time do you think you've spent playing?
Not often, but I do still turn it on because it's like a nice. It's unlike any other game that I play. That is, it is a sailing simulator, and it's fun to just like hop on a ship, even by myself,
yeah,
and just sail around the ocean and maybe knock out a couple chests or so, bring them back and sell them for money that like I don't give a shit about. But it's still like neat to sail around the world, and playing with a party of people is still really fun because that's what they spend all their time on, that and the most beautiful fucking water I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
It's just like, that's not going to last for much longer, I don't think.
I don't think the audience is going to be there. You know, I think there was like a mad enthusiasm for it in the first week. And I think it's going to, from a user standpoint, like just fall off a cliff when everyone realizes, oh, like I had a bunch of friends from college that were playing, and like the text chain went silent, like dead silent, because just there's no desire to keep playing.
Oops. God, sad. I hope the last game we have is a good one, because I'm feeling fucking down in the dumps.
Can I say, I want to play Sea of Thieves. I feel like I missed my opportunity.
It was a very narrow window for what
yeah.
it's worth.
Well, there was all the betas too, but
it's
yeah.
been out for 9 days. That's crazy. It's been out for 9 days. Even Evolve, we got a good month out of that one.
Well, anyway. I'm going to talk about a game that has been out a lot longer and I think is going to be popular for a very long time. Y'all, I finally got into Fortnite, and I'm going to use Fortnite Mobile as an excuse to talk about it and pretend that somehow that makes it a new game.
Finally,
Fortnite.
I get to find out what Fortnite is, because I have been, the kids, all hey. My kid, all my mini kids have just been wild about this game, Fortnite.
Hey, I'm going to try to describe it in a different way than the obvious way. So let me know if that works. I could flop hard. What if you took PUBG, right? And you think of PUBG as like the hardcore PC shooter of like the 1990s, and then you wanted the GoldenEye equivalent, I would say it's Fortnite. It is drastically simplified battle royale game. It is, going with the Nintendo 64 comparison, very rigid geometry. So a thing that I think is really noticeable about the maps versus PUBG is it's not super open. Things tend to funnel you into corridors between areas. The world looks like old school, hard polygonal, open world settings.
It looks like a Banjo-Kazooie map.
Yeah, kinda. And it's just so much more friendly, picking up weapons and not having to worry about how you're going to spec each weapon is a relief, especially when you're playing on controller. I don't know if any of y'all have played PUBG on Xbox. Maybe this latest update is a little better, but I found it to be a pretty joyless experience versus the PC version. Fortnite, on the other hand, I've really enjoyed it on every platform I played. It works obviously very well on PC. It works just fine with a controller, and it handles pretty okay on mobile, to the point where for a while I was preferring it just because it was easy to like load when I had a few minutes here and there. The other thing that I am really digging about it, that maybe will put off some people, is that I have won squad matches. I don't know if I'll ever win a solo match unless I just get lucky with who gets killed early.
Yeah, no, you won't.
The end game is not about shooting in a lot of ways. It's about this insane skill ramp of people who can build and will trap you in tunnels. They essentially use building as shields and then will move in close on you, put you into a tunnel, or start building towers, and you'll have towers that like take off into the sky and branch off in all sorts of different directions where people are kind of hiding in these little tunnels that they create. It is bizarre, and it feels like kind of a natural evolution of all these kids who were playing Minecraft when they were 10 are now playing a shooter when they're 15, 16, like a peak.
Younger. Like yeah. The target audience for this is like 12.
Sure. I would say that
not intentionally. I'm sure Epic is not marketing to them, but like think about like tonally and the art.
Sure. I guess what I'm just saying is the kids who are like at winning this game feel like they are people who have had 5 years of building video games about building and crafting experience and could build and craft in other games rapidly and now are using that skill alongside shooter skills, which again, like I can't compete. But it is super fun to watch.
There's and this whole universe of multiplayer Minecraft combat mods that we never, ever covered. We never, it was so on the periphery. And then I would go to a convention and I would see it everywhere. These mods where there's like arenas or, you know, almost a battle. There were battle royale style games where you could like craft little hidey holes for yourselves and have to make bows and swords and shit. And it's like I totally think Chris is on the money here of just like it's real similar to fucking PUBG, but I think that there are lots of different sort of places where this thing finds its roots.
Yeah. Also,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wanted to talk about the end game specifically because you brought it up, specifically about how you would never potentially win a solo match, which I actually agree with, but kind of in a weird way. When I first started playing, you know, obviously I'd been playing PUBG for a very long time, a year or whatever it has been. And when I first started playing Fortnite, I was like, oh, whatever. It's like an arcadey version of PUBG. What I've come to realize is it's actually much more, maybe hardcore is not the right way to put it, but it's actually a lot harder to play and do really well, I should say, because we're going to get a little grokky for a second. Time to kill is like a big deal in shooter games. If there's a fast time to kill, it actually allows for shittier players to do well because even a really skilled player, if they go down in a split second, there's nothing they can do about it. And in Fortnite, it takes a really long time, a surprisingly long time to kill someone, usually like 3 or 4 or 5 shots. And being able to stay on target for that long is really tough. Add in someone that's doing that and also building walls and all sorts of stuff, like the skill gap towards the end of the game, the last 20 or so players, becomes way, way wider than it is in PUBG, where you could arguably sit in the grass and get lucky and kill the last guy. There's almost no way to do that in Fortnite, which is interesting. I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah,
I've heard a lot of people make that case. That's the first time that it's ever actually clicked for me, and yeah, I totally agree.
I also want to say how just dramatically better it is at getting me interested in spending money on the game, despite it being free to play. The season format is inspired, and I know it is in some ways borrowing from other formulas like Hearthstone, but there's this, that you measure your progress, whether you're paying or not, you are constantly increasing your level, and every level, or I mean not every level, but as you progress, various levels have different like rewards. So at level 2, maybe you get like a new shirt. At a different level, you get XP boost. None of this affects the actual play of the game. So it is kind of silly to be getting all these XP boosts that don't improve your play in any way. But so while you're doing that, there is another level progression that is stuff that you only get if you bought that season. And I saw it and I was like, well, I don't care about any of this stuff, so no big deal, free game. Until I had made it to probably like level 20 or something. And then I looked back and I saw all of these items that I had earned. And I was like, man, that's great. Like, $10, I get all that stuff, sure. I'll pay for that. And then I did it. And afterwards, as somebody who I don't think I've ever bought a cosmetic in a game, I don't know what I was thinking. Because I did, individually, I would not have bought those in the store. But there was something about this sense of like, well, I already earned it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Not paying for it, I would be silly because I've already earned it.
You're losing money if you don't buy it.
Yeah, well, in reality, it's like, well, they just got me to pay for something that they were holding away from me.
I mean, PUBG does that now too, with the every crate you earn is locked and you have to pay $2.50, whatever, for a key to actually open
so
it.
So obnoxious. I hate it.
Also, the like rapidity of these modes that they're adding. They did the 20v20v20v20v20, which was great, but even better is Blitz mode, which have any of you tried this?
No.
It's, oh my gosh, it is perfect, and it feels like I hope they make it permanent because it's so wonderful for mobile, but the idea is it is hyper fast, and the weapon drops are everywhere. They're much higher, and you harvest, I think it's 2 or 3 times what you normally harvest. And so as the plane is going out over the map, the first circle is already there. And as you're dropping, it's already counting down to the circle moving in. And then I think it's like 2 minutes between each circle push after that. So things move very, 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 very fast. And because you're dropping into heavy weapons, you can like drop into the city and 30 people will drop into like a major location. All of them will get weapons really quick. I dropped into a town, and the first thing I got was like the best kind of shield thing. And I drank that. I started chopping through a building. Somebody had clearly seen me on the other side because the second I broke through the wall, they detonated explosives. But it wasn't enough to kill me because I had the shield. And then right next to me on the ground was a sniper rifle, which I picked up and just shot them in the face and then took all their stuff.
Shit, yeah, dude.
Wrecked them. And then I got like put into a little box by some probably like 12-year-old and he just let me die in the circle.
Can you in like 60 seconds so we can at least put an asterisk next to this when we list it in the contents of the episode, explain what the mobile is like? Is it good?
I think the mobile is good for somebody like me. For somebody who is probably never going to be a great builder, the mobile is like totally fine. It has a good deal of auto aim that helps without feeling cheap. It looks pretty good. Also, your progress is carried over between...
Love that.
All from mobile to console to PC.
Every platform it carries
it's
over.
It's so good. That's is great. Such relief and should be in every game. And
how is that? Is this the first game where we like?
It's
like,
not the first game.
Destiny not fucking
the fact
have
that Destiny doesn't do it is so dumb.
Well, and also the fact that you actually can play your like make progress on mobile. That's for me the deal breaker because being able to just hit like I am not usually the person who like hits the daily quest. But being able to like put your phone, it's just like survive to be in the top 50 3 times. Yeah, I can do that. That doesn't take any time. I have my phone. I can I'm not that sleepy. Where I would never go into the living room, turn my console on, and start pursuing daily quest in a free to play shooter.
They also do a couple really neat things on mobile. One of which is they use haptics for like vibration, which is kind of cool. Like whenever you shoot or hit a thing, it'll vibrate your phone.
Yeah.
The other thing that I love is the way they handle footsteps is awesome. So if you've played a shooter, PUBG certainly, obviously sound is very important. Knowing where people are shooting from, direction of people running, how close they are, stuff like that. If you're on a phone, obviously you don't have surround sound or a setup that'll tell you. So there's actually a visual indicator that they added to the mobile version that'll tell you. So if there's footsteps, it'll show a little footsteps icon. If there's like a gunshot, it'll show you an icon in the direction of the gunshot. If there's like a chest nearby, it'll kind of give you the vague idea of a chest location. It's great.
Is the whole game on mobile, or is it just the Battle Royale thing?
The whole game and all the new modes and your season pass.
Well, no, Justin's asking if the single, the cooperative.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Has anyone played that?
I played it and spent a lot of time with it.
That's not part of the game anymore, right? Like, we can all.
I mean, that's not really Fortnite anymore, right?
It's not. Although all the branding is still that, but like, I don't know who plays that. Are there people that play it? I don't know.
I did not care for it.
Charlie and I got pretty deep into it for a while. It was deeply flawed, but it had its moments.
It's fascinating. There's never really been a situation like this where like one side part of a game became like the reason people were playing the game. I guess GoldenEye multiplayer maybe would be the comparison, but like, it's weird.
Yeah. Is this going to be our game, you think? Because it's going to be wild if we're like, our game of the month is Fortnite. But if we say like Fortnite mobile and then a winky emoticon and people know what the fuck we're doing here.
I think we can still do it.
I don't.
I want to be able to talk about Fortnite at the end of the year.
I also want to say like the second that Fortnite, I know this is every month, but like the second Fortnite comes to Switch, which it has to, right?
No.
I'm
just going to leave it at that
Okay, well, presumably
I would be surprised if it was here soon. I could be wrong, but I think that they are smart with where they are investing their resources. And, mobile seems like the type of place that you want to... Like, I think they want to get mobile perfect, you know, before they, like, figure out Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, that's kind of the impression that I've gotten is they've been so good about scaling and...
The only reason I think that there's a chance is that it would be a big Nintendo press conference play.
That's true.
Yeah. Even if it comes out 6 months to a year from now.
Nintendo Direct, not press conference.
Right.
All right. I mean, I could make a case for Ni No Kuni too, but I think that this is the more obvious choice. But
yeah.
And I think we'll probably talk about Ni No Kuni 2 at the end of the year.
I think the important thing is just for us to get on trend. Like, you know what I mean? We need to start saying Fortnite more on this program, no matter what it takes.
Drake is cool, so, like, we Ninja, could be friends with Jake because of this.
Ninja's not as cool anymore. Ninja...
Oh, yeah, he said a bad word.
Not good.
No good, Ninja.
All right, let's wrap up.
Okay. That actually is... That's a quarter, right? That's a quarter.
Yeah. That is the first quarter.
That's the first quarter. And the games of the first quarter are?
Fucking Subnautica.
God, Subnautica? Is that right?
Great. Love it. Stand by that pick.
Subnautica.
Finally played it. Didn't care for it.
You did it wrong. Subnautica. what was the one last month? That was a good one last month.
Far Cry 5?
No, sir. That's this month, and it's not this month.
Was it Nier?
Could have been near this time.
We were in agreement about the last month.
We liked a game.
I'm gonna Google it.
I got it. Okay, here it is.
Monster Hunter World.
Oh, no, yeah. It wasn't. Monster Hunter World.
Monster
got
Hunter
beat
World lost
by Subnautica. It was.
Oh, it
Into
was
the Breach.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh man. Can I talk about how Into the Breach is probably the best fucking game of the year?
Yeah. I mean,
like,
we can't.
Is it too late for that?
It's the game of my quarter, for sure.
It's amazing. It is definitely my pick for the quarter.
I'm okay having that be our quarter pick.
I think Into the Breach kicks both these games' asses. I love Into the Breach, man. I could play it forever.
I think we're going to discuss, like, all three of these games at the end of the
year.
Yeah,
for sure. An honorary distinction, for sure.
All right. Take
Congratulations.
Us out, Justin.
Congratulations to Into the Breach.
There's just so much passion and enthusiasm.
Well, I honestly think this little mini debate was muted by the weird omission of Monster Hunter World in that slot. It really should have beaten Subnautica,
Stand
but didn't.
Stand by it.
But congratulations to all this month's games. It's an honor, as we say, no matter how much we may literally pull down our pants and then pull down our underwear and then deposit fecal matter directly into your gaping maw. Well, it is an honor just to be nominated here on the Bestie. So congratulations.
You know how at the Oscars, they bring up the best pictures and then they have somebody come up on stage for each best picture. And if they don't like it, they just shit all over it.
That's my favorite part.
But congratulations to all the games, especially to Fortnite and just to
Fortnite mobile wink.
Fortnite. Just to maximize our SEO here. Fortnite. Llamas. Congratulations to Fortnite. And congratulations to all our games. We will be with you again next month on the Besties. So be sure to join us again next month for the Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best game?
Besties!